Matt Harrison, Chris Rosebrough, Aaron Wolf, Peter Bender, Todd Peppercorn, and Terry Mattingly will be speaking at the 2017 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th in Collinsville, Illinois, about 15 miles east of St. Louis. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 9th and 10th in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org.
We don't treat religion like a subject that we think influences the news and what influences what happens in the world.
The God of Islam wants us to die for him. Jesus died for us.
A conscience that's bound to anything other than God's word is enslaved to idolatry.
When we do our own thing as a congregation, ignoring history, ignoring the divine liturgy's history and so forth, we have in a sense become an island unto itself.
Topics you can really sink your teeth into. That's why Iowa dentists love Issues Etc.
We are comfortable with the term religious right. When we hear the term religious right, certain things pop into your mind. Jerry Falwell, or nowadays Jerry Falwell Jr., although, wow, it's really getting hard to classify some of these things. Religious right might sound like a little bit of an anachronism, but it's still a major boogeyman in terms of what the media think religion is in the United States. But what about the religious left? Does it exist? If it does, how would one define it? How would one go about determining the parameters, the boundaries of the religious left? Is it doctrinal? Is it social moral positions? What churches would we be talking about? Those are good questions when we talk about media coverage of the religious left. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Thursday afternoon, the 30th of March. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll be talking about media coverage of the religious left with Terry Mattingly, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, to kick off the program. A little bit later, Dr. Lane Berglund will respond to a CNN column titled Why Jesus' Parables Make Us Uncomfortable. Why did Jesus tell the parables in the first place? And what does CNN make of the few that it treats there? Then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us for our series, Christ in the Old Testament Today, Psalm 130, My Soul Waits for the Lord. You can join us with your questions or your comments over the course of the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And our Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about media coverage of the religious left, Terry Mattingly, a regular guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
As a journalist, when you read the words religious left, what specific questions do you want answers to?
Well, I think it's important for the average person to, first of all, stop for a moment and say, what is the religious right? In that sense, we have a firm image of the religious right, but I think for most people, when they hear it, the main thing they think is conservative religious people who vote for Republicans. Just as in recent years, the word evangelical has basically come to mean white churchgoers who vote for Republicans, is kind of how the public probably defines that term. If that's how you define the religious right, the religious left would probably, in the minds of most people, be religious believers who vote for Democrats. But the minute you say that's the case, you get into all kinds of historical problems. I can think of a number. In fact, it's kind of confusing when you think about the history of it. If you back up a generation or two, Southern believers were overwhelmingly Democrats. So at that point, the religious right, you could say, didn't exist, even though there were just as many people who were conservative and there were just as many people who were religious and just as many people going to polls in the American South. But certain issues hadn't come up yet. So when you look at the history of how Democrats have voted in the American South, everyone would agree that to some degree this was affected by race. But when the civil rights movement began, and you began to have things break down in the Democratic Party over race and differences occurred, it's very important to remember that that didn't kill the Democratic Party in the South. The religious right doesn't arise as an institution until kind of the 1-2 punch of Roe versus Wade and Ronald Reagan. You know, Roe being an overwhelming event within our culture that kind of slapped everyone in the face, and then Ronald Reagan being kind of a genre-busting candidate that made a lot of conservative people kind of more comfortable voting for him because of his charisma, etc. Notice how I'm not talking about the religious left yet. But when you talk about the religious right, does that include everyone who's opposed to abortion? Well, there are all kinds of extremely politically liberal people who are opposed to abortion. This is true historically, and there are some that remain with us, although their numbers in the Democratic Party have fallen to almost nothing. The other day, the New York Times ran a piece by a Catholic thinker that said, the Democratic Party, if it really wants to break its image of being pro-abortion as its primary identity, is going to have to be willing to compromise on some issues related to abortion if it wants to get those voters back. When that piece ran, social media exploded with rage, basically with people saying, you cannot be a Democrat. You cannot be a liberal unless you're in favor of abortion rights. And that was extremely telling, because at this point, the question is the religious left essentially religious believers who are willing to back abortion and a couple of other key social and moral issues? The old religious left historically, which was defined by support for Martin Luther King Jr., civil rights movement, opposition to the Vietnam War, very much an issue of its time, that old religious left has now morphed into a different set of issues today. And at this point, I don't think our press really has a picture of who these people are and what they believe and why they believe what they believe. One of the very first posts in the history of Get Religion 13 years ago was an appeal to the media to take the religious left more seriously, both in terms of what it believes in terms of religion and in terms of what it believes in terms of politics, and try to help clear this up. And here we are 13 years later, and I still don't think there's any consistent press language about this, which is why if you go to Google and search for the term religious left, you get almost nothing.
Does abortion similarly define or delineate the religious right?
Well, it certainly is a dividing point among certain types of Republicans. When you talk about the Republican Party, even though it has a pro-life platform consistently, the Republican Party is the party where they don't know exactly what they believe on abortion. I mean, there are all kinds of people from kind of the libertarian lifestyle left, or what some people would call country club Republicans. You have all kinds of people there that are still pro-abortion rights. Then you have the religious right, which people will also accurately call social and religious conservatives. But let's throw a wrench in here for a second. And the wrench that I talk about in a post that went up today about a Reuters piece on the return of the religious left, where is the Roman Catholic Church? Is the Roman Catholic Church, are the U.S. Catholic bishops, even better, are the U.S. Catholic bishops on the religious left or the religious right? You want to take a stab at that?
Well, it totally depends on what the issue is.
Right. I mean, just for starters, no one has been in favor of health care reform, including probably single-payer government supported health care, which most people think of as like socialized medicine or something. Nobody has been more in favor of health care reform than the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference. But when you come down to Obamacare and the specifics of that package, what prevented the U.S. Catholic bishops from being able to support it? Religious liberty concerns related to abortion, contraceptive, and, you know, symbolically, whether or not you can face elderly nuns to have to pay for contraceptives and abortifacients in their health care plans. So religious liberty intervened, even though this was an issue where the U.S. Catholic bishops are normally, quote, politically liberal. So where do they fit? I like to point out to people that when you're dealing with Pope Francis, someone that in this Reuters piece is hailed as a hero of the new religious left. Well, do they appreciate his stand taking as a bishop in South America that advocates of same-sex marriage were cooperating with Satan? Are they in favor of his very consistent and frankly very strong language on abortion as a form of kind of ideological colonization of much of the world by rich people in materialistic lands in the West, like America? Francis is another one of those people who can't fit into American political labels. You just can't do it. So trying to say that the Catholic Church is on the religious right or the religious left is frankly nonsense. Ancient Christianity is too big to pin modern political labels on it. It just doesn't work. Not that the press doesn't try.
So if you're asked to write the entry for the AP style book in 2017, if there is an entry on religious left, which I probably doubt there is, but if you're asked to write it, how do you write it, Terry?
Well, I would actually define it in terms of majority groups. I would say you're starting off with the churches of liberal mainline Protestantism. You're starting off with liberal forms of Judaism. In other words, you're dealing with kind of the institutional left wings of these various churches, denominations, and religious bodies. I think that's one of the safest things you can say. I think you could say that religiously liberal Catholics would belong in there, because you have lots of Catholics who, frankly, oppose their church's teachings on a lot of things, specifically related to the sexual revolution. But even there, you things get complex, because to my shock, in this last election, it appears, based on the exit polls I saw, that Donald Trump won or did pretty well with members of the old line, mainline Protestant churches. I'm sure that must embarrass the heck out of the leaders of those churches. But Donald Trump is a member of a liberal mainline Protestant body, one that is totally fine with abortion rights and one of the strongest supporters of LGBT rights in the American religious scene. So is Donald Trump a member of the religious left? Well, no. So you see, you're having to differentiate, but even within these groups, yet I think that's the best place to start. There's no question that historically, most people would identify the religious left with the liberal mainline Protestant churches, Reform Judaism, etc. And I still think that's where you have to start today. But the most intriguing thing to me, and this is where I ended my post today, I'm not sure that the religious left is where the action is today. For almost a decade now, I've been listening to pollsters and sociologists who study religion, and they've been stressing that the left now has become a complex coalition. You and I have talked about this. When you look at the spectrum of American politics today, on the far left, you have the old liberal religious believers, but then you have growing numbers of atheists, agnostics, and most importantly, the religiously unaffiliated, the so-called nuns with a big N, N-O-N-E-S, that showed up in the Pew Forum study a couple of years ago. I first started hearing about them in the mid, about 2006, 2008. And this is intriguing to me because what this means is that if you want to make everybody in that coalition happy, can you use the same language? If you're talking about education, or if you're talking about the needs of the poor, or if you're talking about helping single mothers, you take a lot of these moral issues on which you want to make statements, or even LGBT rights. Can the leaders of this new religious and non-religious and even anti-religious coalition, can you use the same language as a Democratic politician when you're reaching out to atheists and agnostics as when you're reaching out to African-American Baptists?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the religious left. When we come back, we're going to take up something he raises in a recent column. He asks the question, is the current religious left surge that people are noticing, is it simply part of the anti-Trump world? And if so, how many old-line Protestants in the pews opposed Trump on Election Day? Doesn't sound like as many as people probably think. We're talking about media coverage of the religious left. Terry is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate.
I bet you didn't know that the teaching of Latin in schools is making a comeback. Latin? Really? Isn't that a dead language? Well, take a look at what studies say about how well Latin students do on a test like the SAT. Memoria Press's Latin program will revolutionize your students' vocabulary, knowledge, and their understanding of grammar. And there is no better subject for teaching critical thinking skills. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR.
The world may tell us that Easter is about eggs and chocolate bunnies, but we Christians know that there would be no Easter without Jesus' death and resurrection. Emmanuel Press has just released an Easter card with beautiful artwork that confesses Christ's victory over death and his redemption of mankind. You can find this card and others at emmanuelpress.us, E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L press.us.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The fake news wars that we're experiencing right now are not going to end soon.
Terry Mattingly, on his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, making the case for news discernment.
We're actually seeing a war to define what is and what isn't news. This whole thing is about the purpose of journalism and whether the classic American model of the press, with its whole emphasis on balance and fairness, is going to survive the internet age. What we'll be talking about is where savvy readers can go to get their news. We're also going to ask, what happens to American public discourse if we all keep on clicking on news sources that only tell us what we want to hear?
You can meet and hear Terry Mattingly June 9th and 10th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call 618-223-8385. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage of the religious left. Terry Mattingly is our guest, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, you ask a question in a recent column, whether or not the surge of the religious left that some are noticing is really just part of the anti-Trump world. Why do you ask that question?
Well, simply because that's where the action is and that's where the heat is. And right now, you've got lots and lots of people who are mad as heck and they're not going to take it anymore. And a certain percentage of them are bound to be people who go to fairly liberal pews. So if any of them get together or any of them you know, hold a rally, especially if it's in a place like New York, as covered in this Reuters story, a reporter who shows up at that is going to look at these people and say, behold, the religious left. And that's a natural reaction. At the same time, it doesn't tell us anything about whether their churches are growing or shrinking or vanishing or anything else. It's just that event, it seems logical to define them as the religious left. Now, I would argue that right now a lot of this momentum is nothing new in particular happening in these organizations or among these believers other than Trump and other than this intensely bitter election that we've just been through, an election in which we had lots of headlines about religion, but I would also argue we had a lot of incoherent headlines about religion. Trump got her a lot of religious votes, but as we've stressed here on the program a number of times, there's evidence that among white evangelicals, supposedly the most rabid supporters of Trump, that up to 50% of them didn't want to vote for Trump. So I'm not even sure when you talk about Trump was elected because of the religious right. That's simplistic right there. These are labels that reporters like to use that, frankly, are often way too simplistic, and they always have been.
I'm wondering if we kind of dug down into the question you raised before the break about the nuns, the religiously unaffiliated,
right,
whether or not we would be able to find a substantive difference with kind of the main issues of the religious left, except on the significance of their religious affiliation. What do you think?
Well, that's actually one of the things I'm most curious about, because when you look at what unites the nuns, the religiously unaffiliated, and what unites the atheists and agnostics with them, it's a consistent liberal pattern on moral and social issues, primarily sexual revolution issues, since those are the ones that are currently the hottest. Now, when you combine that with liberals who are coming out of religious traditions, what are most of the fights within their denominations about? What are the hot-button issues right now that are dividing Episcopalians from Anglicans and ELCA Lutherans from Missouri Synod Lutherans? It's those moral and social issues again. Only here, in a religious context, they have very strong doctrinal overtones about what you believe about creation and what you believe about what it means to be male and female and how all of that figures into the plan of God and natural law and all kinds of things. So I'm actually, my hunch is that if you have a room full of white liberals on a lot of these issues, people are going to be pretty much of the same mind when it comes to Roe and gay rights and same-sex marriage and probably even religious liberty because of how that, you know, factors into those other subjects. Where things get complex, just as where things get complex when you're talking about religious conservatives, is the minute you begin to overlay issues of race, money, economics, social justice, unemployment, immigration. And at that point, I'm not so sure. I mean, for example, right now, on immigration, that's clearly a big Trump issue. But is that a simplistic issue among Roman Catholics, Southern Baptists, and among Black and Latino Pentecostals? No way. I mean, the Southern Baptist Convention is right now quite divided, I think, on a lot of things related to immigration. They may believe that immigration is an important issue. They may believe that it's important to defend America's laws. But does that mean they agree with Trump or that they want to back a Trump-style plan or that they have similar feelings about how to handle that at the international level? No. So I don't think there is a religious right position on immigration. Now, it appears there is a religious left position on immigration when it comes to the sanctuary movement, just to name one example. But once again, these are not easy subjects to parse out. I'm sure Catholics are incredibly divided on the sanctuary movement. I would imagine the U.S. Catholic bishops are divided on the sanctuary movement, even though they're united on the serious nature of trying to welcome as many immigrants as possible, you know, into this society for thoroughly biblical reasons, for, in fact, for some of the same theological reasons that they would oppose abortion, euthanasia, and whatever. This belief in the sacredness and the dignity of every human being from conception to natural death. This stuff gets complex, doesn't it?
You had asked earlier, tongue-in-cheek, whether or not Donald Trump, given his religious affiliation, could be interpreted as a member of the religious left, but it kind of got me wondering, who is the face, kind of the easily recognizable face of the religious left, the poster boy or girl, so to speak? In the past, it would be Jerry Falwell or someone like that, that people could say, ah, there's the religious right in a picture we can post right next to our column here. Who is that for the religious left right now?
I'm not sure there is one person, but stop and think about it this way. If CNN or MSNBC decided to try to do a feature on the religious left tonight, who would they invite? Now, there I can start coming up with some names. Tony Campolo, Jim Wallace, probably the Roman Catholic priest James Martin, the Jesuit priest. They might bring in whoever is the current leader of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Rob Boston is a kind of a secular to liberal voice there. You know, but these are not people that the American public would know. These are not famous folks. To me, the really big one, if you want to talk about whether or not she will get more involved in American politics, if you were looking for a person who could put a face on the religious left, it would be Oprah Winfrey.
Why?
If Oprah got involved in politics, she could become the face of the religious left, because she would both stand for liberalism on the sexual revolution, yet at the same time, this kind of vague, hands-in-the-air spirituality that might appeal to lots of folks in ethnic pews, black pews, etc. She's someone who comes across as very religious, even though it's hard to define the content of that religion. But here's the key. She's got personality. She's got charisma. She's got flair.
Does she have what Hillary Clinton didn't have with the public? Because I was thinking, if there was a face for the religious left, a deeply religious woman, by the way, it would probably be Hillary Clinton, but Oprah's a likable version and a little more marshmallowy version of that.
Well, and also, can you think of anybody, just to be blunt about this, if Bill Clinton was consistently called the first black president, can you think of anybody whiter than Hillary? I mean, just in terms of social style, I don't care how many times she went to see Hamilton. I mean, she is someone who comes across as upper Midwest, upper Northeast, elite, white, high culture. And I don't think there's much she can do about that, no matter how sincere she was. And I think her beliefs on these issues were sincere. But she certainly isn't the face of the religious left. Now, they voted for her, but did she excite them? Did Hillary Clinton excite anyone other than a generation of Democratic leaders who came up under her and were running the Democratic National Convention? I don't know. Bernie Sanders, I think, connected more with the religious and moral views of a lot of young people than Hillary. I don't know what that means. Bernie Sanders went to Liberty University and was able to stand up and articulate, even from a position as a liberal or non-practicing Jew, was able to talk about human rights and values in ways that provoked respectful conversation. So is Bernie the face of this new religious left coalition? We're all struggling here, but what we're saying is they don't have a superstar. They don't have a hero. If Oprah goes into politics, they got one. Day one, they've got one.
Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you.
Glad to be here.
Terry Mattingly will be making the case for news discernment at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June the 9th and Saturday, June the 10th. in Collinsville, Illinois. That's about 15 miles east of St. Louis. He'll be joined by Pastor Matt Harrison, Aaron Wolf, Pastor Peter Bender, Pastor Todd Peppercorn, and Pastor Chris Rosebro. You can find out more and register for the Summer Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The fifth annual Making the Case Conference, June the 9th and 10th in Collinsville, Illinois. On the other side of the break, we're going to look at a CNN piece that purported to deal in a new way, in an honest way, with the parables of Jesus, why Jesus parables make us uncomfortable. Dr. Lane Berglund will join us and get his analysis of how CNN treated those parables.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300: Grace Lutheran, Tulsa, Oklahoma; Heritage Lutheran, Valparaiso, Indiana; Mount Olive Lutheran, Duluth, Minnesota; Our Savior's Lutheran, Windham, Minnesota; St. John's Lutheran, Algoma, Wisconsin; Our Savior Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California; St. Mary's Lutheran, Des Moines, Iowa; St. John Lutheran, Yuma, Colorado; Christ Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri; and Redeemer Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Emily Post recommends polite conversation on topics like the weather, but the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's magazine, The Lutheran Witness, is no Emily Post. Go to cph.org/try-Lutheran-Witness for a special offer of $6.99 for 6 issues and receive the March issue covering controversial topics like climate change, overpopulation, and the intersection of science and theology. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/try-Lutheran-Witness.